When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Bear Betts is back. I'm your host, Bear Chris Felica, joined by Jeff Schwartz, Sammy P, and Will Hill. Will join us in a little while to kick around the gambling group chat, where we cover a lot of college basketball stuff, whether with the tournament, let's do the title, make miss the tournament, and just a bunch of other stuff, and as well as that little thing known as the Pro Football Annual Selection Meeting, which will be taking place at Lambeau Field this year, isn't it, Jeff?
Detroit,
that right?
It's at Detroit, I think. The Lambeau, Detroit. One, it's somewhere in the NFC North. I feel like I don't know. Where's it at this year? Detroit.
Is it Detroit?
Yeah, Detroit this year. That's what I thought. Yeah,
I'm misinformed. Maybe it's next year. I knew they announced it for Lambeau one year.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh man, that would have been cool to have to be working on the draft at Lambeau. No,
the problem with Lambeau is there's like one hotel. I don't know where everyone's going to stay. They just stay in Appleton and drive up. But like, even when we go as players, I had a playoff game at Lambeau Field in 2012. With the Vikings. I know, Will, we talked about this as a joke about the Viking season in 2012. Yep. But there's one hotel that everyone says at the Paper Radisson. I don't know what it's called now. It might have changed names. It's like the one hotel in near Lambeau Field. I think it's in Appleton that you can stay. And everyone stays there, and they drive up to Lambeau to play the game. The weekend we were going, there was a wrestling tournament that booked the hotel. We had to stay at like a Holiday Inn, which, again, I'm not knocking Holiday Inns, but like in some random city in Wisconsin. Like, I don't know where we were at. Never heard the city. I don't remember the city that we were in. And we had to stay at like a random hotel because the one hotel that everyone stays in the city was booked up. So for the draft, I don't know. I don't know where everyone's going to stay, Bear. Not my problem.
We all love a good Holodome with the Holiday Inn.
I found the city, Bear. We stayed in Neenah.
That's a real city. You didn't just make that up.
South of Appleton. That's where we stayed. And in Neenah, it says that the nickname the Paper City. So if you thought you were getting a shout out today, welcome to the shout out at the Bear Betts podcast.
Things we did not think we would cover this morning in Bear Betts. Wisconsin and the Holodomes at Holiday Inn. So, free promotion there for the tourism board there in Wisconsin. But many more places to stay in Detroit.
Yes.
It's a good spot, though, with the Lions being such talk of the league and coming close to making the Super Bowl and having such a great year. So they'll be excited to host the draft. And I'm assuming now that Caleb Williams will be the first name that we hear announced in that draft, because we saw some movement this week in the odds, like Jaden Daniels, his odds kind of going from like 14-1 to be the number one pick, kind of around 7.5-1 now.
Yeah.
Odds to be a Bear kind of cut in half, and you hear report. I mean, I know there are teams out there that kind of have Williams and Daniels is 1A and 1B. You were talking in the group chat, and we'll talk about it a little later, about how Williams not taking his physical at the combine was kind of a little weird.
Yeah.
Is that red flag? But we still think when push comes to shove that it will be Williams who winds up going number one.
I think so. And I texted you guys about, 2 weeks ago? It was before the combine, right? It was like, hey, guys, is it worth putting a little bit of money on Jaden Daniels to go number one overall? You three laughed at me all you wanted. But my point was that I think the number is going to come way down before draft time. And I'm not sure he's going to win, but we talk all the time, Bear, about having sort of tickets in your pocket, right? And the idea of sort of having a good number, even though you might not win that wager, but the number, we talked all the things about, you know, the Brock Purdy MVP, the Tyreek Hill MVP odds, right? Like just having that good number. And at that time, I told you guys it was 20 to 1, 21 to 1. Now you had 14 to 1 on one of your sites. It's 7 to 1 now. Do I think Caleb Williams is going number one? Yes. But enough people now are starting to talk about Jaden Daniels going one overall that it makes me wonder, okay, what are the Bears really thinking? Now, it could just be boredom of dealing with talking about the same thing over and over again, right? Just like in the NFL, every year we pick someone but Kansas City to win, even though it's always Kansas City, right? I get the boredom of this, but it does feel like we watch more Caleb Williams film. There are some holes in his film. It's not really, I don't think, his fault per se. The offense was really atrocious. The offensive line was bad. There's no rhythm in the passing game. When you start sort of watching more film on Williams, can Daniels do more? I think Williams is better. I think it's significantly better, Bear. It's not like I don't think he's good. I'm just talking about the odds of this. There could be a team that says, look, man, we want to go to one. We want Jaden Daniels. It's a draft season. I saw tweets that some teams have Daniels ahead of Williams on their board. I don't know. I thought the number was good. I still think Williams is going one. The Bears cannot pass on Caleb Williams. I'm not concerned about any of the off-the-field issues, which is none. I mean, it's just his manager who's managing him people have concerns about. So Williams is going one, in my opinion. I think Daniels is going two. There's wages to be made around that. He's still plus money, barely now, to go two. I think he fits what Cliff Kingsbury has had in a quarterback, Patrick Mahomes, Tyler Murray. That's what Jaden Daniels kind of, I would sort of comp him in that direction. The ability to move and run is better than Drake May. I think May goes three to New England. I don't know, but he goes three, and then we go McCarthy somewhere in the top 10. I don't get it, Bear, why he's going to top 10, but McCarthy feels like coming out of the combine in the top 10. Offensive line, wide receiver, quarterback. These numbers aren't up yet, but like defense might be 10 and a half in the first round. Defensive players taking Bear and the under. I mean, you have a couple cornerbacks, one from Alabama, one from Clemson. You have a defense tackle from Illinois. You have Chop Robinson. You have a Verse kid from Florida State.
Dallas Turner.
Like Dallas Turner, Liatu Lott. Like, that's eight guys that you mentioned. I don't think that might be it, Bear, in the first round. So,
and usually corners are like the number you really want to go over because usually.
Oh, there's three. There'll be three. The Toledo kid, Mitchell, I forgot to mention. There'll be three in the first round. So three corners, two pass rushers, one D tackle. That's it. I don't know, Bear, who else is going the first round on defense.
But this is a helpful exercise because these numbers are not up anywhere that I have found yet in terms of offense, defense breakdown, position breakdown, first wide receiver. Like, I haven't seen a lot of this other than first quarterback taken.
Yeah.
Like, this will, like, as we do this and you doing this right here, like, that's helpful for when, as soon as the site throws this up, you flashback, hey, oh, yeah, wow, they have 13 defensive players taken in the first round. Like, we just barely got to 8 or 10. So, yeah. Like, I mean, I'm just making up a number like the site does that. Like, I think that gives people a little bit of an advantage when to be able to get a good number and throw something up there to it. I want to just go back quickly to Caleb because he brought up film again. I'm no film quarterback expert or whatever. But the one thing that, and again, I don't know if it was the circumstances with the offense, the offensive line, the situation, whatever. But the one thing that I noticed in the previous couple of years now with Caleb is just kind of his mindset to just not necessarily want to settle for like this short gain, the easy completion. Like he wants to try and make every play like a highlight film type throw or a 30 or 40 yard. Like I am I wrong with that? Or no. Is that just.
You're not wrong on that thought, Bear, but this is why the pre-draft process is important to talk to Caleb Williams, talk to the coaches and find out the why, right? Is the why because he's selfish, doesn't want to take the easy throw? To me, that's not the why. The why is the offense had no rhythm, Bear. Like when you watch him play, it wasn't like there. It didn't feel like there was a purpose to the offense, which is odd for a look around the offense. We've seen over the years, right? His ability to run the ball, throw the ball deep, like have this sort of pace and rhythm. They didn't have bad offensive line this year. The wide receivers were not as good as they looked on paper to start the season. No real tight end. Running back was okay this year, but again, the offensive line wasn't great. And the defense was historically bad. And so all these things go into Caleb Williams' head of like, okay, I got to make special plays because I don't have special players around me and my defense can't do it. And then also to part, to not to ramble on, but part of it too is there weren't easy throws in the offense. It's not like the offense had Caleb Williams catch the ball, slant, boom, hit that guy. Okay, here's a quick out. Here's over the middle, tight end. It wasn't part of the offense. So a lot of times he's holding the ball, trying to find something else deep because there's nothing underneath. His time to throw is like 3.5, which is crazy high in college football, right? Bo Nix, 2.5. Michael Penix, 2.6. Like, time to throw typically can be a negative to evaluating a quarterback. Why is the ball not out early? When you watch his film, it's because no one's open. There's no one there to throw the ball to. And his time to throw isn't that he is trying to make a special play at times. He's just no one open. He's trying to find a play down the field because there's no one else to throw to. So this is why watching the film, I think, is important discussion about the draft. Advanced stats are great. I love ADOT. I love EPA. I love DVOA, Bear. I love all those numbers. But the why is important, right? Why is someone's ADOT so low? Why is Bo Nix's ADOT so low? Well, go watch the film and figure out why. It's not because he's a check down king. It's just sort of part of the offense. Go find why is Caleb Williams' time to throw so high? Go look at the film. I know not everyone has access to it. All the games are on YouTube. You can watch a TV copy. There just wasn't a rhythm in the offense. And yes, I think he has to work on finding that rhythm in the NFL. But 2 years ago, they had it. They had better wide receivers, better offensive line. So he goes to Chicago, let's say. He has DJ Moore. He has a decent offensive line. There's work to be done. And probably Roman Dunze is drafted in the first round by the Bears. If not him, maybe it's Malik Nabers, or maybe it's Marvin Harrison if he drops. They want to trade up for him. Or second round, you draft the kid from South Carolina, right? Leggett, who ran like a great time, or Keon Coleman, right? Who was faster in sort of the GPS numbers than he was on the 40 time. Like, you're going to have playmakers there better than USC. So long way to say, I think Caleb Williams is going to be fine in the NFL. Things to work on, of course, as every rookie does, but USC's offense last year, Bear, was just really bad.
Yes. Yeah, it was. And the season just really unraveled. Another team that's linked to a quarterback, and it's a quarterback that would be signing as a free agent, would be Kirk Cousins. And the Atlanta Falcons, reports out there now about Cousins being linked with the Falcons, which leads to believe that they're all the smoke about Justin Fields is over and done with and was just smoke. If indeed the Falcons are signing Kirk Cousins, does that lead you to believe that they may draft someone like Drake May and kind of give him the for lack of the Aaron Rodgers, Jordan Love treatment, where he sits for a couple of years as Cousins kind of plays out with however many years he has remaining in the league? Or do you think that they'd be looking elsewhere, whether it's offensive line, wide receiver, or an additional defensive help?
So to me, if you get Cousins, you're simply trying to win now, not sort of prepare for the future. And I know they're heavy in the wide receiver market in the free agency. Like, they want a wide receiver. They wanted a wide receiver. And I think they can go the wide receiver at 8, even though at 8, probably not a guy there to take. You're reaching for someone, maybe take Brian Thomas at 8. That feels a little high for him, Bear. But you can also trade out of 8, and someone comes up and takes McCarthy at 8, right? Like, there's an option to get out of there. So to me, it's about they're trying to win now. So what do you need to win now if you're the Falcons? At 8, is it Arnold the corner? Is it a pass rusher? Or, again, trade back, get more picks. One thing about the draft, Bear, that we're learning is there are certain situations where trading back is not – like, the Bears should not trade out of 1. But for the most part, trading back is a great strategy to building your team. You're almost never wrong moving back and getting more draft picks. Obviously, you have cost-controlled players. You have a more of a chance to hit on guys, right? Draft tends to be a lot of 50-50. If you have 5 picks, you hit on 2 guys a year, that's not great. Move back and get yourself 2 more picks. Now you got 7 guys. You hit on 3 or 4, right? Like, so you're never wrong trading back in the draft. And so Atlanta, if they get Cousins, I feel like at 8, they want a wide receiver. Probably not going to find one that's greater right there. Take a defensive guy or trade back and get another corner at 16 and pick up another first-round pick for next year. So I think there's plenty of options for Atlanta, but it does seem like Cousins. I've been told the same thing that was reported yesterday, that they want Cousins. And look, Cousins' agent is fantastic. Mike McCartney gets him guaranteed deals every year. So if they guarantee him 2 years, Bear, I think to me they're trying to win now, draft someone to help you win now.
Oh, sure. And you're in a division that you certainly are very capable of winning now for sure. And you're right. If you go down and look some of these like mocks, like obviously Worthy ran well, but you're not going to take him there. Like,
no.
If you look like the mock I'm looking at, it's a couple days old. Yeah, you have a Dunze taking it like six, and then you got to go down to like 20
for Brian Thomas. Yeah,
3 for Brian Thomas, 25 for Brian Thomas. So it's like there is a sweet spot there where if teams want to, I mean, you might be able to be in a position where you can trade back a couple of times and pick up even more picks, because you're right. Like I remember when I was working and covering the draft at ESPN and going through just about these teams that always you seem to reach to take a quarterback super high, whether it was Zach Wilson or whomever, like the strike rate on these top 10 quarterbacks is really, really low. And you're better off taking like the better player and then maybe back around at the top of the second round or in the third round, trying to address the quarterback position or looking towards free agency or something. Because a lot of times when you take these quarterbacks in the top 10, they don't pan out. Even though this year, it seems like a lot more people are sold that Daniels and Williams for sure. And then potentially May and McCarthy won't necessarily turn out to be a total bust like a couple of quarterbacks in recent drafts have been. But we're gonna build our team right now.
Yes,
and we're gonna move on to the gambling group chat with Sammy P and Will, where we kick around a lot more of the NFL draft stuff. We kick around a lot of NCAA tournament stuff. In markets that we're looking forward to when they get posted, both in the tournament and in the draft. So have a listen. Sammy P, Will, Jeff, and myself for the Gambling Group Chat. I hope you enjoy. Gambling Group Chat is back. Jeff and I again, joined by Sammy P and Will Hill. And Sammy P and Will, we were talking about in the A block about how there's been a bit of a shift in the market in terms of who will be the number one pick. Like, Caleb Williams is still a massive favorite, but we've seen the Daniels odds slashed quite a bit. Like, Jeff and I were talking in the A's. I'd like to get your opinion in the A's. I like everybody's a show master here, the rundown, the A's, basically in the previous segment, off the top of the show, for those of you not versed in rundown lingo. But Sammy, I'll start with you, because you're dialed in a little bit there to Chicago, and we've been talking about Fields for a while, how they weren't going to re-sign him. Do we still think Caleb Williams is the guy for the Bears, or is there something to this Jaden Daniels kind of line movement here post-combine?
I just thought the 20-1 was a little too high a couple of weeks ago, and I'll let Jeff save his piece. I think he's got Daniels going first, second, and third in this year's draft, be an NFL draft record. Ryan Poles is going to take Caleb Williams. It's not anything else. Like, there's going to be a lot of smoke over the next 6 weeks about it could be this guy, it could be that guy. Maybe they trade again. Can you imagine the fallout in Chicago if they trade the number one pick 2 years in a row? It's never been done before, because they had it last year, traded to Carolina, got a pretty good deal. It got DJ Moore and this year's number one, but you can't overthink this one, Will. You just can't.
I'm with you. I actually saw it like minus 900 for Caleb Williams, and people aren't going to bet in minus 900. I'm not like suggesting people do it, but I actually thought about like, hey, is it worth it to just risk nine to win a dollar on Caleb Williams? Because the Bears have been so tortured at quarterback for years, forget years, decades, that they finally have the number one pick. It's clear they need a quarterback. I don't see them saying, you know what we're going to do? We're going to get cute here. We're going to throw a curveball. We're going to think outside the box. We're going to trade the pick and move down. It's just, you know what? If all things are equal, even if you have these guys close, just go with conventional wisdom. Pick the guy at top of everyone's mocks. If you pick Caleb Williams and he turns out to be a bust, nobody can really knock you. If you get cute and you go with Daniels or May or whoever else and you trade down and Caleb Williams turns out to be the next, not even Mahomes, but top five, top eight quarterback, you're going to get destroyed. It's going to be a black mark on your career. So if nothing else, if not even football reasons, just practical reasons, job security, I think you have to play it straight here and just, hey, Take the guy everyone projected number one. And then to me, the draft gets interesting where Washington's going to take whoever at two, whoever they like better. To me, the draft is interesting at three. If New England has a guy that a preference from the quarterbacks, do they, if they can't get the guy they like, if the guy they like doesn't fall to them, do they take a quarterback just to take one? Maybe they like all three to be, you know, equally, so to speak, whether it's Daniels or May, whoever falls to them. But my question is, do they trade down if they don't get the guy they like at three? At three is where the draft gets interesting to me, Bear.
If you look at the three, like right now, I'm looking at some odds from a site and off in a faraway place, like to be the third overall pick right now. I see Jaden Daniels and Drake May basically the same price, yeah. Right? I mean, Daniels plus 141, May plus 151, Marvin Harrison plus 226. So, like that's what you're looking at. I mean, Jeff. I mean, I know we went over it before, but just so Will and Sammy kind of know where you stand. Like you're on the same page. This is Williams, right?
Yes, it's Williams. The point of my text a couple weeks ago to you guys about taking Jaden Daniels was I thought the number was too high considering where I thought I would end up being after the combine. The one question I have left with Williams, and I think the Bears have this also, is the medical, right? He refused to do the medical at the combine. He's going to do it at some point with the Bears on his visit, which is can be obviously now and the draft. And what if something goes wrong in that physical? I thought it was a little bit odd. He just didn't do it now. I get the argument of not wanting everyone to see your medicals, but that's going to be passed around the league anyways. I mean, it's kind of a silly thing. It's the point of the combine is to do your medicals there. So that's the only thing that can hamper this is he gets to Chicago and he has a weird medical evaluation, something we don't expect. And the Bears end up having to go to Jaden Daniels or somewhere else. But again, the number was at, you know, 20-1, 21-1, now it's 7-1 at some places. But I think Williams is the better quarterback, the better player. I'm not so concerned about the other things that he may or may not have said about wanting to be in Chicago. He'll be a Bear if they draft him. He's not going to hold out and go somewhere else. And I don't think the Bears are trading that pick. Sammy's absolutely right, guys. The Bears cannot pass on a quarterback two straight seasons. There's no way they can survive that. Draft Caleb Williams, get over it. I think the question then it becomes at two, who does Washington want? I think it's Jaden Daniels based off of what Cliff Kingsbury has had at quarterback in college and in the NFL. And then number three, to Will's point, it seems like the Patriots want a quarterback in the veteran market and also want to draft a guy. It makes a little bit of sense. That would be Drake May. Then what happens with McCarthy? Is Atlanta trading up for him? Are they taking him at eight? Is Atlanta signing Kirk Cousins, which seems like might actually happen? So that's sort of, I think, four quarterbacks that were drafted in the first round. And that's it. I don't think Penix and Knicks are making it in the first round.
So do you think we haven't seen any of these derivatives out there? Like, you think 4.5 will be the number that they post for quarterbacks, or do you think that they'll make? I mean, four. It just feels like a push.
Yes,
you probably go 4.5 and heavily juice it to the under. Don't you think?
Yeah, yeah, that exactly. They might make it where, hey, we know it's only going to be four. We don't want any pushes, so we'll put it at 4.5, but we'll make the under. We'll make you pay like, you know, $2, maybe minus -250, where you just say, hey, we don't want to bet it. So, I don't know that, like, I feel like the draft is just becoming more and more prevalent from a betting standpoint where, I don't know, if you were doing this 5 years ago, 7 years ago, 3 years ago, you can get some good numbers, you can find some hidden gems, but like, we're doing shows about it, it's mainstream, everyone's talking about it, everyone's betting it, where, I don't know, they're putting fewer and fewer things out, these numbers are carefully produced here, and it's harder. I don't know if you guys feel the same way, Bear, if you feel the same way, where it's hard to find, like, wow, I can't believe they put this number there, that's totally mispriced. I'm having a harder time finding things that are totally mispriced.
Yeah, I agree, and it feels like, yeah, it's the options are fewer and fewer, and they're getting posted later and later, and I mean, look, I get it from their standpoint. But that being said, if they would have posted, if they meaning Vegas or whatever other legalized books would have posted a lot of this stuff earlier, like, I think the books would have made a killing last year. And I would imagine that they did with some of the prices out there on, just look at the rotation to be first quarterback taken. Like, there was a thought process where Levis might be, and Anthony Richardson, and then like Richardson winding up in the top four. Like, I mean, I know I got slaughtered on the draft last year, mainly because of Anthony Richardson going to the Colts where he did. So I think they should just post this stuff. You know what? If player wins, if we win, you know what? You got a million other things out there that you got a massive edge in, and it's not just an erase of information that you're going to wind up making it back. So if you get beat, tip your cap, and just and move on. We talk about the quarterbacks too, and you're talking about New England at three. Like there's this just seems like a sudden. Again, I mean, we talk about this with the quarterbacks. Like, what do you believe? What don't you believe? Like, are we certain now, Sammy, that Marvin Harrison's going to be the first wide receiver taken? Because it feels like there's a lot of chatter out there about Neighbors maybe being right there with him. I don't know if teams are turned off. Harrison didn't go to the combine. There's a lot of buzz about Roma Dunze. Like, are the Cardinals, if it is the Cardinals at four, like they're going to have so many comparisons, I think, to Larry Fitzgerald. It'd almost be impossible to pass up on Harrison, wouldn't it?
I don't think he's impossible to be passed by the Patriots. You know, I mean, this is a team, you know, everybody talks about New England and says, well, they need a quarterback. Well, they need a quarterback, a receiver, an offensive coordinator, and probably three offensive linemen. You know, this is not one player away from being a good team. And, you know, last year I was getting drilled on social. They're never going to fire Belichick, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, okay. Belichick ran that team into the ground because he couldn't develop anything on offense. And their leading receiver last year, DeMario Douglas. And if you could pick DeMario Douglas out of a lineup, I'd give you $100 because you probably can. That, like, they couldn't throw the ball last year because they had no protection. They had a bum quarterback. They had a bum backup. And they had no wide receiver talent. This New England thing is going to take probably 2 or 3 years to build back up. And to me, it's the old fantasy analogy. If you're picking fifth in fantasy football – and it goes running back, running back, running back, running back. Do you want the fifth best running back or do you want the best receiver? Well, I would take Justin Jefferson or Ja'Marr Chase. But again, I'm not an NFL general manager. If you don't have a high grade on May or Daniels, you take the best player available because you need one thing on offense. You need talent. You don't just need a quarterback. You need all around talent on that offense. And I think, you know, the last time that they had a receiver that they drafted, Deion Branch, like, was that the last good receiver they drafted and developed? I don't count Edelman because he was a quarterback. They traded for Welker. They traded for Moss. It's been almost 20 years since they drafted and developed the wide receiver.
New England is interesting to me for the things Sammy said, but also because it's kind of like draft theory, right? Because if you're New England, and to Sammy's point, best player available, it could be Joe Alt, you know, the left tackle from Notre Dame. Do you take him at three? But also, they have a pick at the top of the second round. So you could go Marvin Harrison, you go offensive line, and then take Bo Nix or Michael Penix at the top of round two. Or, look, I saw someone say that next year's quarterback class is good too. So to Sammy's point, take best player available at the top of round one, take offensive lineman at the top of round two. Wide receiver and offensive line are the two most loaded positions in the draft. You're going to get a good player at the top of round two and skip on the quarterback and wait till next season. There, to Will's point earlier, what he said, like they're kind of the star of the draft begins with them. So I think it's not locked in. They're going to take a quarterback at three, and trading out would be the best option, right? Trading out, if you don't want a quarterback, get a bunch of draft picks and then load up your roster with offensive weapons, have those guys play this season and wait for a rookie quarterback next season.
Yeah, that's the great thing, because a lot of times people, what are you going to do? Trade down. Well, a lot of times there isn't a trade partner because there really isn't a player perceived word, but people are going to want these quarterbacks. So they will have trade partners at three for sure. And I'm glad you said that too about the Patriots and draft theory, because I mean, I was talking about this a couple of years ago with the Jets when they made the mistake of taking Zach Wilson. Like I was saying, take Penei Sewell, find a quarterback when you're picking in the second or third round. And we all saw how that worked out. And I was talking with a Giants fan last night about, what do you think the Giants will do at six? Maybe do they take McCarthy? I go, they're another team that just needs talent on offense. Take whatever offensive lineman or a Dunze or whoever's there. And then you're picking at the top of the second round too, where you could probably take Bo Nix or Penix or even Spencer Rattler, who people suddenly are falling in love with. Jeff, do you think it take away Notre Dame, Alt, like, is he the best lineman in the draft, or is Fraga from Oregon State the best lineman in the draft, or is it Oldham?
I think it's Alt. The Fuaka hype, I like him a lot, but like the hype train with him is like off the tracks right now. I mean, I think we gotta pull that back a tiny bit. I think Alt's the best one. I think Olu is probably second. Now, Fuaka, the benefit you have with him, the Oregon State right tackle, is he can probably play guard in the NFL. Joe Alt at 6'8" and a half is not playing guard in the NFL. So I think Alt is the most ready guy right now. You put him in any offense, New England, the Titans, the Chargers, he's like plug and play right now. Your best offensive lineman. You know, Olu's got some things to work on, and Fuaka can play tackle and can play guard. So I think that that's sort of how I would rank them. You know, the Fatanu kid from Washington's an awesome player as well, can play guard and tackle. Then Mims, the kid from Georgia, only has 800 snaps, but he had an incredible combine. He's 6'7" and a half, 340 pounds, incredible testing numbers, just hasn't played very much. So the one fun bet I'm going to try to wager on at some point is the over-under an offensive lineman draft in the first round. Could be like 12, 12 and a half would be the number set at. It might go over. The offensive line group this year is very good.
I'm glad you said offensive lineman, because Will, I was going to ask you, what number would you need to go, or what do you think the number will be on wide receivers taken in the first round? Because I heard someone last night say like 7 is very, very possible. And initially I was like, I don't know. And then you factor in what Worthy ran and like some of the other guys, like, is 7 possible, do you think?
Yeah, that might be another situation where if they think it's 7, they don't want to push on anything. They want a result on whatever they do, so they put a hook. So would you go 6.5 and juice it to the over? I mean, 7 does sound a lot just when you say it out loud. I mean, there's only 32 picks in the first round, so 7 of them are going to be wide receivers. I don't know. It's a position where you can find guys later in rounds too and pay them less. So 7 does seem like a lot. I'd have to sit there and go team by team, but I know we were just talking before we got on the air, like the Chiefs are a team that makes sense for a receiver. And they're, you know, you add Worthy to that team. I mean, my goodness, they won it without any receivers. You're going to start to give them a couple good receivers. It might be over for everybody. So yeah, I wouldn't be shocked if it got to 7. That's another one that'll be interesting to see where they open the line and where they open the juice.
Yeah, I think Chiefs wide receiver and Jets offensive lineman, like when these markets start popping up for like what will be the first position player a certain team takes, like those would be the two that I would be running out to make a wager on. We haven't really hit on Justin Fields. Like, I don't know. I mean, Jeff touched on it a little bit before with the Falcons looking like, with the report out there, that Kirk Cousins may be their guy. Like, is there a market for Justin Fields right now, Sammy, do you think?
Well, I think it's funny. We can always capitalize, and I'll go quickly. We can capitalize on these overreactions in the next team market. DraftKings does these all the time. And when we saw that, you know, the Falcons are in love with Justin Fields, like they went to minus 500 and every other team went way too high. Like, I have Patriots at 22-1 just in case they realize that, you know, they can take Harrison third and then they could flip 34 for Fields. It was 22-1. Now it's 14-1. I think it's just so funny. Like, this is going to happen. It's all narrative driven. And then it doesn't happen. You know, you can take a big pop on these really big numbers on, you know, like Fields was like 18-1 to go to the Steelers and 22-1 to go to the Patriots. And now that the Falcon thing has fallen apart, those numbers are all a lot lower, but I think it's clear. If there's one thing that's clear, other teams not liking Justin Fields should make the Bears position at 1 that much easier. Yeah. Right. Can we all agree on that?
There's no market for him. Who's trading for him? Is Pittsburgh doing it? I mean, maybe the Falcons are seem pretty likely to be on Cousins. Like, is there a surprise team of the Raiders going to be like, we can't get a quarterback in the draft, let's go Fields for a year? I don't know who the market is, because then you have to pay Fields essentially. Like, you're trading a second round pick. Are you then going to play him a year and then just let him walk? Are you going to sign him? Like, I don't know who's signing up for that when you have a very quarterback talent draft at the top of the draft. You could make the case again, all these teams, the Raiders should just no Fields, take Michael Penix or take Bo Nix. I mean, like, I don't know who's going to want Fields before the draft. After the draft, sure. If the Pittsburgh Steelers end up with no quarterback, okay, we'll take Fields. Before the draft, who's trading for Fields?
I can't imagine anybody would be giving up even a day two pick for the reasons you outlined. Although you brought this up last night when we were kicking around on the chat, like, the one type of team that Fields, I think, would have some value to would be is if he's going in there as solely a backup. Like, if Justin Fields is your backup quarterback, that's a pretty good position to be in, because at least you know he can play at the NFL level. Now, maybe he's not an A-list starter type, but in terms of a backup, Justin Fields would be somebody that I think a lot of teams would be willing to have to go to war with for a couple of weeks to bridge the gap until your starter gets back. But it is March, and well, yeah, I'll go ahead and make that January, February Izzo joke right now, like we do every year. And Michigan State almost making another magical run last year before they got beat in the Sweet 16. Kansas State beat them in that great game, and then K-State and Will's FAU Owls getting to the Final Four and putting a little bit of weight around Will's pant line with the tickets that he cashed. But conference tournaments, we don't know all of the brackets yet for the bigger conferences, but I guess we can kick around some of the bigger ones. I mean, UConn, defending national champion, they are your favorite right now to win the Big East tournament, right around 140, 150 or so. But there's a kind of a pretty good gap if you drop down to Marquette and Creighton. Like, do we think, like, is UConn a lock to win this game? Because we did see them go on the road and get blitzed by Creighton. Now, obviously, there'll be a ton of UConn fans at the down there to support the Huskies. But I don't know if like laying 145 or whatever it is with UConn Will is worth the play here. It seems like Creighton might be the team that has some value.
Yeah, and you look back through the years, there's really no correlation, at least from what I can find, from what I can remember, be teams like that win the championship. Sometimes they do well in the conference tournament. Sometimes they go one and done and they get the rest and they go about it. So different coaches, I think, approach it differently. UConn has not done well in this tournament in recent years. It's been a while since they won this Big East championship. It's been a while since I think they even played for the Big East title. Now, again, we're talking about a different caliber team of this year, but than in past years with Kevin Ollie and the late Calhoun years. But still, I mean, I think they lost in the semis last year to Marquette, and Creighton has played them well through the years. I think Creighton is something like, top of my head, just like 7-2 versus UConn since UConn rejoined the Big East. Creighton has done very well against, might be 7-3 now because they split this year, but I'm not laying a price here where you have to win a few games. I question the motivation where some of these teams, some of these coaches, like if you gave them true serum, do I really want to run my team into the ground 3 games in 3 days, have a few days off, and then get ready for the big dance if I'm, you know, if my eyes are on the national championship? So laying a minus price is just not something I'm interested. They'll probably be playing for the championship game. If my life depended on it, I guess I'd pick them. I can't bet Marquette with the Kolek injury. So taking a shot on Creighton, I think, is interesting. I don't have the numbers in front of me. St. John's does play the game in their own building. Again, we don't know the seating, the matchups, but St. John's at a long number might be interesting. But Creighton, St. John's, that would be the way I go. Would not play the top of the board in this one, or really a lot of these, Bear.
Sammy, any Big East thoughts?
I think UConn was a lot better defensively last year. You know, Sonogo in the middle, Newton and Hawkins, I thought were outstanding guards. You know, they're good. I don't think they're great like they were last year. And that was just a special run, man. You know, they got through the first couple of rounds and they started just pounding teams. I think they won every game in the tournament by double digits.
Yeah.
But last year's UConn team was better. Last year's FAU team was better. So just because it happened last year doesn't mean it's going to happen this year. I know that a lot of people want to make the Butler correlation and all that, but it's a pass from me there. I want to go quickly to the Big Ten. I think Ohio State as a big dog is going to be enticing in some of these games. I mean, they got rid of Holtman, which was long overdue because he couldn't coach his way out of a paper bag this year, and the players just didn't care. They didn't like him. They were done with him. I'm not saying Diebler's the guy long term, but you look at what they've done. I mean, they've won 4 out of 5. They're getting healthy. They play good defense. Thornton can win them a lot of games. I just feel like if I can get like 8 points with Ohio State against Purdue, you know, 6.5 against Illinois in the Big Ten tournament. I'm not saying they're going to win the tournament, but I mean, they're going to be a very, very sexy dog for me, catching over 3 possessions against the big fish in that division, in that conference, rather. I think Ohio State's a team to watch, and I would not be surprised at all. I mean, we've already seen them beat Purdue. They could beat them again. Yeah. They could beat Illinois. That's a team that's playing really good ball last like 5-6 games or so. It's a different team than it was in December and January, the Buckeyes.
You know, you're right. And even if you go back to early part of the year, they did beat Alabama in the non-conference. And you're right, last 10 days or so in conference, you beat Purdue, you beat Michigan State, you beat Nebraska, three tournament teams in that league. So I certainly don't hate that play at all. Jeff, you got any conference tournament stuff, maybe whether Big Ten or something else?
I just wanted to bring this up when we consider these teams. I had our researcher look this up. It's a good number when you think about sort of where you want to put your money on. The last 10 years, Power Six teams that were first or tied for the first time the regular season. Since in the last 10 seasons, Power Six teams that were first or tied for first in the regular season also won their tournament only 45% of the time. So a lot of times the team that wins the conference during the regular season is not winning that tournament. So we consider some of these numbers here. Laying, as Will mentioned with the Big East, like laying some of these big numbers, probably not worth it.
The Pac-12 is going to be one where Arizona is going to be a massive favorite to win that conference tournament. Like, would you be like surprised at all if like USC won a couple of games and was sitting there maybe in the semifinal and they were an ultimate bid because like they still got it. They still have a lot of talent in there. And it's a league that's been up and down. We've seen Arizona capable of losing almost to anybody. Like Sammy was thrown at Ohio State there as a wild card in the Big Ten. Like USC, I'll be curious to see what their price might be in that Pac-12 tournament, just because of my, I don't want to say disdain for Arizona. I wouldn't call it disdain. Just my lack of trust. And like Will was saying before, like you really want to, maybe for some of these teams, there will be a little bit of nostalgia because it is the final Pac-12 tournament. Maybe they will want to say, hey, we won the final Pac. We're the Pac-12 champions for eternity now. So, but USC was a team that I thought might have a little bit of value there. Will, any of these conferences that are getting underway this week where you might have a thought, some of the smaller leagues?
Yeah, I have a couple thoughts, but first of all, on your USC point, that's a team that popped into my head. I don't know if you can parlay this anywhere, but USC with winning a couple games in the Pac-12 tournament parlayed with Sammy going to the title game in his Bronny James jersey, I think is a nice correlated parlay. Patriot League is interesting. Colgate's minus 280. I think they're vulnerable. This is not the usual offensive machine we see from Colgate. So they are a little vulnerable. Lehigh 8-1, something like that is possible.
Yep. They were fortunate to beat Lehigh the other day.
Yes.
Down there.
Atlantic Sun too. Stetson to the two. I think they've got 6 wins by 2 possessions or less, or the 2 possessions or less in games that have gone to overtime, things like that. So I don't know. North Florida at 20-1. Queens was 40-1 earlier. I don't mind like Atlantic Sun. You just, you take a unit and you spread it over 3 or 4 longer shots because I do think the top seeds might be vulnerable there. Austin Peay 7-1. So again, I'm looking to fade the top of the board in terms of these smaller conferences, and they're fun. Like these conference tournaments, these one and done things, these one bid leagues, they're so much fun. Every game is a game 7. So I don't mind, taking a long shot and just having some fun with it.
Yeah.
And Bear, think about the Missouri Valley.
I was going to say the Missouri Valley or the Ohio Valley, because I was going to go Ohio Valley.
Okay, I want to say Missouri Valley just really quick. Indiana State and Drake, I think, should both be in the tournament. I think this should be a two-bid league. It probably won't be because of the strength of schedule and all that. But Bradley is just as good, and Bradley has taken both of those teams to the wire this year. You can find Bradley at 4-1 to win the Missouri Valley Conference. They could get to the final, and then at that point you could bet off it or hedge it or whatever. I just think that team is very underrated. Brian Wardell is a very good coach. Indiana State and Drake are awesome, but Bradley is just as good. And guys, this is the tournament of unders. I grew up in this league. You're going to see 128.5, and you're going to go, wow, that's not enough. And the final is going to be 56-50. So when you see these Missouri Valley totals, don't be scared to go under, even at 123, 126, 128, because oftentimes they're not high enough.
Yeah, I've even heard some people make a case for Northern Iowa in this tournament as well. But yeah, I'd be looking to fade Indiana State here. I think they kind of had that run and peaked a little bit earlier in the year, and I'd be looking to back someone other than the Sycamores here. But what I was saying before about the OVC, like I'm a little surprised Morehead State is favored to win. I mean, if you look at the way that conference tournament's bracketed, like Little Rock and UT Martin are already in the semifinal. So Morehead in theory is going to have to beat UT Martin and then beat Little Rock in the final to get there. And they have not been the same team that they've been in the past. I think Little Rock, if you can get them around plus 250 or so to win the league, basically they'll win their semifinal game, and then plus 250 or so to beat Moorhead in the title game. I take my chances with Little Rock there.
Yeah, and I mean, we're probably not going to go over every single one of these conferences, but I do think it's important if you're going to dive in, if you're going to bet these conference tournaments, look at the format, look at the seeding, because they're not all the same. Some of them are spaced out. Some of them reward with home court, things like that, to the higher seed. Some reseed, some don't. So look at how the tournament is structured and, you know, make your wagers accordingly. I think it's important. And shop around, too. You find different numbers, different books for a lot of these. These are not like – it's not like the NFL where the Chiefs are playing, you know, the Bills, the line's two everywhere. A lot of these numbers can be very different book to book.
One thing outside of the conference tournaments that we were kicking around, and I know the odds are not posted everywhere, but it's these like odds, yes or no to make the tournament. And these I love these props, and again, you gotta search around, and because I know they have them up, I will mention Bet Rivers specifically, because I know they do have some of these teams up. They don't have every team up, but you can go down. And I was looking at before we got on, like Seton Hall to make, again, the splits are terrible. Minus 155 on the yes, plus 116 on the no. I mean, it's just
nice to be a bookie.
I was going to say, it's just a terrible, terrible split. But if you can find a good price on Seton Hall to make the tournament, I kind of think that they're a good play. I mean, they got to win over UConn. They got to win over Marquette. They beat St. John's twice, which couldn't matter. Yeah. And like I said, the yes at minus 155, new head coach who had tournament success in the pad. Like, I think that kind of, whether you admit it or not, like that stuff will be kicked around the committee room, I think, like when they pull up the Seton Hall sheet. So, Seton Hall to make the tournament at minus 155. I thought that was a pretty decent play.
Yep, I could see that. It's interesting. Half the Big East is on the bubble between St. John's, Seton Hall, Villanova, Providence. So some of these teams are going to cannibalize each other. I don't know. One that jumped out to me, I was hoping it was a little lower, obviously. And you mentioned the splits are not kind to the better, but Virginia, I think, is minus 145, minus 150 to miss. Can we just not put that team in the tournament, please? Nobody needs to see them. They can't shoot. They can't score. They can't make free throws. I mean, I almost want them to make it so we can fade them. But that's one team. Just put an Indiana State team in. Put a mid-major team in. Put a more appetizing team in. We don't need, you know, a mid team from a down ACC in there just because they're a big name, a big program. Put somebody else in. So Virginia to miss is one I like.
You don't like 48, 44, 41, and 49 points in the last
five. That's if it goes to overtime or double overtime.
That's not your that's not your cup of tea. It's funny though, you mentioned because we are going to see, someone's going to be right and someone's going to be wrong this year, because amongst like the last couple of teams in and first couple of teams out, you've got Wake Forest is 21 in KenPom, Villanova's 24 in KenPom, Colorado's 29, St. John's is 20. You've got four teams in the top 30 in terms of KenPom that are like right there on the bubble. And like usually that's like a historic type. Like if you're Texas that too. High in the metrics, like you're a lock.
Right.
And for these teams to be on the bubble, it's like pretty crazy. Sammy, are there any of these that maybe caught your eye?
No, I at this point, I think the market's all saturated. It's good enough. I mean, Colorado's going to make the tournament minus $2. New Mexico, I like. They were minus 120 a week ago.
Do you?
Now they're minus 180, I mean, to make the tournament.
I'm glad you brought them up, because I want to know how they are minus 180 to make the tournament. I know they're 38 in KenPom, and I'm sorry to cut you up, but they got absolutely nothing in the non-conference to hang their head on, and even in conference play, like, yeah, you beat San Diego State and Utah State on your home court, but you had a terrible loss against the Air Force a couple of games ago. You lost to UNLV on your home court. You got swept by Boise in that. Like, how is this? How are they in?
Two words, Richard Pitino. It's this thing of ours, Bear. It's this thing of ours.
Maybe Pitino versus Pitino, that first four in Dayton. Maybe they, well, that would be great for TV, wouldn't it? St. John's versus New Mexico, the dad versus the son. That could be, I know that the committee doesn't think like that. They don't take into account TV, so to speak, or allegedly, but that would be one that would attract some eyeballs, I would think.
Where's the white suit? He's going to the championship. It's happening. Yeah. I got Utah. You okay, Sammy? I got Utah. No, at minus 148. They go to Eugene this weekend, and they've won exactly one whole time in Eugene since they've been in the Pac-12 since what, 2011 now. And they're fifth in the Pac-12 right now. If they lose to Oregon this weekend, they're not getting in the tournament. They're a bubble team right now, anyways. You mentioned all the teams that are bubble teams that are ranked between 20 and 30. Bear, Utah's 48 in KenPom right now. I think Utah is not making the tournament. Colorado, to your point, Sammy's probably in. Arizona's in. Washington State's in. Those are the three from the Pac-12 conference. I don't see Utah getting in. Price is not bad at minus 148.
Pac-12, I mentioned before, Arizona. You look at the odds to win the national championship. And like UConn is favored. Purdue, Houston right there. And then you got kind of that next tier, like Arizona, Tennessee, like, Did your opinion of them maybe change this week, Sammy, in the past week where you beat Auburn, you go on the road, you beat Alabama? Like, does that kind of supersede kind of the past demons of this program and Rick Barnes' shortcomings in the tournament?
If they can beat my Kentucky on Saturday, I'll change my mind. And they should. I mean, they're going to be like a 7 or 8 point favorite in that game. You know, that's going to be the number. I think it's a little high. I've told everybody I've ever met to bet Kentucky this year. So I'm not going to sit here and start lying about Tennessee, how I love them. I think if Kentucky can go death lineup, that's the four freshmen and Antonio Reeves. Nobody's stopping them. I know people are going to say, oh, you got to play defense. Miami didn't guard anybody last year and went to the Final Four. You know, what was Villanova's net rating in 1985, Bear? You know, like, I just think it's so lazy. Like, you got to be this and you got to be that. They have six or seven NBA players, and they've scored 106 points this year. I know you need to get stops, but in the tournament, defense is about effort. It's not that they don't play defense. They've had some stretches this year where they haven't. And I think that team right now is as scary as anybody in the country. Been talking about it since November. I think they're going to beat Tennessee on Saturday, and I hope Kentucky get to 3 seeds so you avoid the ones.
Bear, why don't you like Arizona, Bear?
I have flashbacks to last year and just not trusting Tommy Lloyd in this in a tournament. Like they watching them just completely unravel against Princeton last year, and there was no way out of it. There was no way to stop the bleeding per se. Like I just have a heart. Again, they are better defensively this year, which is true, and maybe the fact that you lose in the first round as a high seed, you come back the next year and you're a little bit more focused, and you take these things seriously. Like again, it's one of those things you can't bet every team. You got to stand against certain teams. So, have I warmed up to Arizona some? Yeah, I have, but I still don't know if I can get there. And I know, like, I'm down on Arizona, and people are down on Auburn, who I'm high on. Like, I know they only got that one quad one win against Bama, who they split with. But, like, you watch them play. Like, you were talking about, Sammy, like, Kentucky being a 3 seed. Like, Auburn's projected to be a 4 seed. Like, if you're a number one seed, like, if you're whoever that one of the one seeds is going to be, UConn, Purdue, Houston, especially Houston with, like, them losing more players now and their depth getting even thinner, like, you want to see Auburn in the Sweet 16, a team that can defend and get good looks and an experienced coach who's taking a team to the Final Four. If I'm a one seed, I sure as hell don't want to see them. So, like, I got them 20-something to one to win the title once their odds drifted up a little bit. So they're a team that I like to win the title.
Jeff always asks about power ratings. I can give you the top five if you want in mine.
Kentucky, UConn, Kentucky, and Kentucky.
No. Kentucky's not even in the top 10 for me. Connecticut is 1, Tennessee is 2, Arizona 3, Auburn 4, Creighton 5.
Creighton 5. That's interesting, because as you were saying that, I was looking at the the updated KenPom ratings and just see like he's got Creighton down at 11. It's interesting that you have Creighton that high, because I kind of thought last year was the year, and be curious. Like, I think they're going to be one of those teams that a lot of people are going to be flashing some pretty gaudy looking tickets, some nice numbers come tournament time to maybe get to the Final Four and win the tournament. It's funny too, because I was thinking, someone asked me this yesterday, like, give me a dark horse or a sleeper to make a run in the tournament. And I thought I took a step back. I'm like, oh, that's a good question, because I didn't want to just say Auburn's like top 10 team or whatever. But I was like, you know what? I'm like, Gonzaga is an interesting team, and I'd love to see, once the bracket comes out, like, what their odds are maybe to make the Final Four for sure, but maybe just to reach the Sweet 16, because like there's this talk about Gonzaga like being like squarely on the bubble and one of the last teams in. Like if you look at Gonzaga this year, like they swept St. Mary's. Well, I'm sorry. They split with St. Mary's, just beat them there. They have two losses in conference play by a combined 3 points. They won it Rupp. Like they beat UCLA, they beat Syracuse. Like people are talking like this is like a 500 team in conference. Like, they're still pretty good. And I think they're going to be back in that like role where they're going to be a 10 seed or something like that. And I think they're dangerous to get to this. And this is a team that I never really have bought into in terms of like winning the national title or getting to the Final Four. And when they've been given a one or a two seed, when maybe they necessarily haven't deserved it. But I think this is a year where there's going to be a lot less pressure on Gonzaga. And I think they're going to play better. And if they're a 10 or an 11 seed, they're certainly a team that I'm going to want to back.
Yeah, 19, I'll throw it up.
Final Four.
Yeah, go ahead.
19-1 to make the Final Four right now.
Not bad.
It's not a bad. It's not. I mean, you'll have to let me. Where is that, my friend?
FanDuel.
All right. Well, I'll have to make a ride to New York or Massachusetts to be able to play it, because the wonderful state of Connecticut does not allow me to play a Final Four, national championship, all this good stuff that we're talking about. For whatever reason, the state of Connecticut has decided, no. The integrity of betting on collegiate sports to win a national championship is too great. Well, maybe we'll have to go for a ride.
I mean, you and I both live in Connecticut. Why does the state of Connecticut hate us? I can sit here in my room here and bet on Eastern Kentucky to win the whatever conference tournament, but I can't bet on the Final Four or the national champion. I just don't get it. It doesn't make a lot of sense to me. One team I'll throw out before we wrap. We touched on them earlier. Colorado could make a run. They've got three NBA guys. They're one of these teams, and so it makes the tournament so interesting, such an interesting handicap. They're so good at home. They're not good on the road. And the tournament, you don't play any home games. You don't play any road games. They're all neutral. Yep. So I don't know. But Colorado does have the NBA talent to win a few games here and make a run.
Jeff, anything before we put a bow on this one?
Only like 5 days left, guys, so I can start gambling in North Carolina. Cannot wait. I've been waiting, dreaming about this day for years. Now all we talk about can actually be actionable while I sit in my office. I cannot wait. And I think we can bet on who's going to win the Final Four too. So good for the state of North Carolina. I like it.
You get all the bonuses too.
Yeah, I get a free hat from one company. I'm looking forward to that. So the bonuses are great. I've signed up for some of the apps already in previous states. I'm going to New York, obviously, so I don't get those bonuses, but enough to make it fun to sign up for all the apps.
Sign up the wife, dude. Sign the wife up too.
Oh, I could do that. You're right. I could sign her up and then get the bonuses. Ben.
Cousins, uncles, you neighbors, you gotta. I mean, you gotta take advantage.
Good idea, Sammy. I like it.
Family selfies circulating throughout the Schwartz text chain.
Your kids will be old enough soon, Jeff. Get them on it. I mean,
are dogs allowed to sign up? Can I sign the dog up for an account? Is that legal? Yeah. Okay. Yes. Perfect. All right. Awesome.
On Jeff's German Shepherd getting a DraftKings account in the state of North Carolina. We're going to stop right there before we incriminate anybody else here. But Sammy, well, appreciate you for all your thought. We'll definitely be back in a bit once this bracket comes out to break it down a little bit more and go a little further into some of the things we talked about. So appreciate you guys. We'll talk soon.
All right, Bear. I got from Sammy Missouri Valley unders. Missouri Valley under. Do we just auto bet those from the gambling chat?
The interesting thing is, like Drake is a higher scoring team, but he's right. Like I can remember, like because they always play those games in St. Louis, Arch Madness, and it'd be early in the day, and it would be you'd look up, and it would be like 49-46, the 2 minutes to go, and you're like, oh, this is great. So he's right, and that's something else that I used to love betting as well, were all of those first half unders in the NCAA tournament.
Early game, yeah.
Early game, empty arena, bad shooting backdrop, unfamiliar with the arena. Like that, like finally they caught on and they kind of start making them a little bit lower. But I can remember like six, seven years ago or so, like those were best bet type materials, Jeff.
Yes. All right, Bear. Let's get to our best bets. You go first. You have an Oscar's best bet, I believe.
I do, and again, you're probably going to need to search around to find these markets. I believe DraftKings has them up in some states, and there are probably some places in faraway places that have certain things up. But Godzilla -1. To win the Oscar for best visual effects. Takaki Yamazaki, he's a very renowned action visual. Are you laughing at me?
Well, I'm laughing about our meeting last week where you said you were betting on Godzilla -1. I said, what line is -1? So that's how much movies I watch.
This is not the initial Godzilla soundtrack from a few years ago. Great movie soundtrack, by the way.
I've watched Oppenheimer. That's the one of these movies I've watched. So sorry to interrupt you. Sorry for laughing.
No, that's
go ahead. All right. I was curious what the
minus shows one that was. You're listening, which is good. But he's a director who's well known for his special visual effects, and this movie certainly falls into that category. The creator, I think, has taken some money in this as well. But the fact that Godzilla -1 is nominated and I think it's favored now in a bunch of places, you might need to search around. But I think there's a nice reward for those waiting on Sunday for those who are actually able to find the spot. So Godzilla -1 to win the Oscar for best visual effects.
Anything else Oscars wise, Bear? Any is like Oppenheimer for sure winning best picture?
I would love to. I took a flyer on Killers of the Flower Moon at like 50-1, even though I don't believe it's going to win. And sentimentally, I would love to see Paul Giamatti win Best Actor for The Holdovers, which is another detention. You probably didn't see The Holdovers, or else you'd be laughing right now.
I told you, I'm looking at the list right now for, you know, best picture and our best documentary, best pictures. Oppenheimer, man. It's what I've seen.
Oppenheimer was good.
It was great. Oppenheimer was
good. And Murphy's a massive favorite to win best actor.
I saw Barbie. Barbie's +1600.
I went on our flight home from Turks and Caicos. My wife was watching Barbie in the seat next to me as I forget what the hell I was doing. Probably like looking at the Gulfstream form or something like that. But and I was like looking over because I heard like visually it was kind of like entertaining and such. Obviously, I wasn't listening, but I asked her like, "What'd you think of it?" And she goes, "I enjoyed it. It was good. It was entertaining, and that's all a movie needs to be." But
yeah,
and another good quote from Giamatti's character in The Holdovers. Without exercise, the body devours itself. So that's word to live by. So I'm rooting for my man Paul Giamatti to win Best Actor.
I agree with that quote. I might have to watch this now.
I think you'll enjoy it. It's set in the early 70s, a prep school. I loved it.
Okay, I gotta check that out, Bear. All right, here's my best bet. I'm gonna go back to some sports. What I do best, obviously, is you know, kind of like, what's the equivalent of the group of five in college basketball? Is there like, do we have like a
Non-power leagues.
Mid-major. There we go. Mid-major. I specialize in mid-major futures. Okay. I'm taking some SoCon action here, which is great because our producer, Sean, I texted him about this and he already had his thoughts. Like, he was SoConned out. He's ready to go. Samford to win the SoCon tournament plus 150-ish. You can search for the best price. I saw 155, 160, but I already kind of included this in our chat. To win the SoCon, they forced a ton of turnovers. They shoot a bunch of threes. They've also beaten most of the teams 2, 3, and 4. And also, too, they lost to Wofford 91-69, I believe, just week ago, 2 weeks ago. When teams like that lose that are the first ranked, I feel like that kind of propels them, Bear, to regroup after a loss like that. So, SoCon, Samford, plus 150-ish. You can get a better number, I think, now to take that. I'll be watching some SoCon this weekend.
I would think UNC Greensboro will probably be the team that they ultimately could match up against.
Yeah, they beat them twice by nine points each.
I was gonna say they did beat them twice, and Samford has certainly been the best team in that league throughout. Emma Stone will probably win Best Actress as well.
Emma Stone's she's an underdog right now. Should I take the plus money for that?
Is Lily Gladstone favored?
Yes, which I also had to look up who Lily Gladstone was last week as well. So, Emma Stone, Emma Stone.
Hammer it. I would like to see her win.
Okay. When is the Oscars?
Sunday.
I'll be in Mexico. Just like you had your postseason football trip, mine is this weekend, Bear.
Good for you.
I cannot wait.
I'll be in Vegas in a week. For the National Horse Players Championship. So if I decide to come back from Vegas after I win the $1 million in the NHC, we will be back that week.
Yes.
Another edition of the Bear Bets Pod previewing the NCAA tournament once the brackets come out. That'll be fun, with the Selection Sunday being when I'm going to be out in Vegas. I'll be out there for all the openers, so that will be wild. But I think even if I win the million and are named a handicapper of the year, I think I like you and Will and Sammy so much that I
thank you, Bear.
That I think I'll come back. So I
appreciate it.
For Sammy, for Will, for Jeff, I'm the Bear. Appreciate everybody listening again. Good to be back with the guys kicking it around. So appreciate you downloading and watching on the YouTube channel, wherever you consume your podcasts. Keep rating, reviewing, and subscribing. The feedback's been great. And remember, the less you bet, the more you lose when you win.